Yo, what's the deal, baby? This your boy, Uncle Luke, formerly of the 2 Live Crew. You are listening to Pass It Down with Mike Silver and Natalie Silver. Natalie is the most beautiful young lady in this deal right here. Mike doesn't look so good, even though they're dad and daughter. It's the big show, baby.
All right, people. So we are back with the second half of our Dante Stallworth interview. And we just talked to him about race and politics and sports. And we had a great conversation. I had a little throwaway question at the end about a hot air balloon. And it ended up turning into an insane story that we had to make a podcast in and of itself. So we are giving you that right now. I believe we're coming off Dante telling us about his plans for his 40th birthday, just to give you some context. And that's it from us. Enjoy the story.
Buckle up. But I'll be settling for sitting in front of the White House and jeering the president and heckling him with the bullhorn.
I love it.
So no hot air balloon for your 40th birthday?
You know what's interesting about that is I never wanted to get on one in the first place, but I ended up getting on one anyway. And I tell people all the time, like, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. Don't
do it. I mean, who would? Who would do that?
I did. <think. laughs> But never so, again.
So
never
this again. This is shortly after you retired, right? This is 2014?
Dude. So listen to this. Okay, so I after that 63-yard touchdown catch I had in New England, that was the first game I had played that year. It was, I believe it was at the end of November. And because the Patriots cut me in the preseason, they released me and then they brought me back after Julian broke his foot. So I got my ankle rolled up on and sprained some ligaments, partially torn ligaments in my ankle. So I will tell you this quick story. I know I've been talking a lot, but.
Oh no, we have time. It's our podcast. You take your time.
this story, I don't know if I've told publicly, and I'm not hiding it or anything. But Bill brought me into the office, and I couldn't walk, so I knew that that my season was over. And plus, again, it was the end of November, and I had just got there, and I knew they needed the roster spot. So I go into Belichick's office, and he sits me down, and he says, "Hey." He's like, did you talk to the guys, the trainers? And I said, no, I haven't. He was like, well, I mean, he was giving me my medical assessment, which is pretty funny, but he's like, you've got a grade 2 sprain and they're saying you're going to be out at least 2 weeks. And I'm thinking, I'm going to be out for at least 4 weeks. But, I appreciate everything you've done. You've come in here and, you just picked up right where you left off. And, he's praising me. And I'm like, okay, so here's the, here comes the glove and the iron fist. And, or I should say the iron fist and the glove. But he says to me, he's like, I'm not going to release you. And I'm not going to do a medical, settlement with you. And I'm thinking, okay. And he says, I'm going to keep you on the roster so you can collect the rest of the checks so you can get your, credit for this season because I had only played one game. Right. And if I did a medical, then I wouldn't have gotten credit. I got credit for my 10th year and played one game. So but that was because of Belichick. He did that. He specifically did that.
Nice.
For pension purposes and things like that. I'm assuming. And all those things. And he kept me on the roster. I got the playoff checks and all that. And he was, those things I would never, those things are things you don't hear about Belichick. You know what I mean? This is my first time talking about it publicly. It's not like I was hiding it, but it's just like, it was just never an opportunity to speak about it. But
yeah, that's cool. And by the way, this was the Letterman jacket game, if I'm not mistaken, when the Texans showed up with the Letterman jackets all
up. Got their ass whooped.
Yes, they did. So basically, he did you a major solid that came up with. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, he basically got me, an extra year of eligibility. So that obviously, like I said, will help down the line with the pension and all that stuff. And because there was no other reason for him to do that, right? Like, he, you know, but he, which is always, you know, again, it's something that I'll always appreciate. He appreciated me, and you know, he doesn't speak highly of many people, but for him to do that and even like speak highly of me publicly, you know, I definitely appreciate that. But that was the last game that I played. And so after that, I hadn't, you know, I was recovering from this ankle injury. So I am in Miami training, rehabbing, I should say. And so the Friday was, you know, it's mid-March and it's a Friday. And it was my first time actually like running on the grass. And I wasn't running very fast. I was like, you know, it was the first day back. So I was just, even though months had passed, it was the first day of me back of me running. So I'm, you know, I'm getting ready to train to, you know, hopefully play an 11th season in the NFL in 2013. And then that next day, that Saturday, was the hot air balloon accident. So then I was set back, right? So then I was set back another 5 to 6 weeks of training. You know what I mean? So then by the time.
Yeah, but that was a win. That was a win, 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You got to take us through the story. Like, this sounds like the most terrifying thing of all time.
It was terrible, man. It was terrible. And I didn't know how bad it was, because, and not to sound like a tough guy, but you know, when it happened, like, the pilot was trying to land in this huge field. And so I noticed that we were getting closer and closer to the power line. I'm like, shit. I'm like, you know, we're going to hit this power line. And before I could get that thought out, we fucking hit the power line.
Oh, and how high up were, so you were power line level when you hit it, and it's you and your girlfriend at the time and the pilot.
Yes. Yes.
And so then what happens?
We were electrocuted, which is, listen, there's no way for me to describe the pain. The only way that I've been able to describe the pain in two ways. The first one is not so accurate, just because of the descriptor, but I said, imagine just being in a trash compactor and just having your bones and your just everything smashed. I think the more apt comparison would be, you know, when I was a kid and watching cartoons, and you would see a cartoon character get electrocuted, and you would see their skeleton, and they would be suspended in air with this lightning around them, and then they'd be, you know, then they'd be like ashes, and that's what it felt like. That's exactly whatever that pain is. Whatever you can imagine that pain, that's what getting electrocuted felt like. And I didn't know that I was on fire from, you know, through the electrocution. I didn't know that I was on fire until I looked at my girlfriend at the time. I looked at her, and I saw her. She was on fire. And it was just incredible. Like, it was, she was engulfed in flames, right? So, like, my butt was hot and my arm was hot. So I'm like, I must be on fire too. And before I could, like, think clearly, you know, the pilot's like, brace for impact. And I'm like, you got to be shitting me. Like, it was bad enough that we got electrocuted. Now we're about to crash landing. What the fuck? Like, come on. You know what I mean? Like, really? So then, it was terrible. So then we hit the ground, which wasn't a terrible impact, but, you know, we did have to brace for it. And I just remember, like, I didn't fall on the ground or anything. I was just leaning over, and I remember trying to, the only thing I could tell myself to do was just to breathe evenly, and to breathe. And keep breathing, and don't close your eyes, because if you close your eyes, you may not open them again. That was my mindset. And I started getting dizzy, so I got on a knee. I took a knee. Donald Trump would have been pissed off, but I did take a knee. And, you know, again, my main focus was just trying to just breathe, you know, just breathe. Let your organs function the best they can and just breathe. And then once I kind of shook that off after a second, I stood up, and my girlfriend at the time, she was burned very badly. And, you know, she had fallen in the basket, so the flames were like on her waist and stomach, and the flames were, you know, also shooting up, because that's, you know, obviously that's what that's what flames do. And so her face was also a little burned. So she saw herself on fire. So she's thinking that she was just like completely charred, like, cause she had no idea. Right. And the only thing I could tell her, man, was just hold her hand, tell her that I was here for her. And just to tell her to also just try to breathe and don't look down. Just don't look at your wounds. Just don't look down.
How did you guys get the fire out when you were both on fire?
The pilot, so when I saw her on fire, it made me realize that I was on fire. And I saw him jump on her with a jacket or something that he had. I don't know if it was a fire retardant blanket in the basket with us, but he put the fire out. And so I was thinking to myself, well, hell, he must have put my fire out too, because, I was definitely on fire. Whoa. And I couldn't see my wounds. And on my arm, I knew my arm was like burned, but the skin was still there. So it was just kind of like, what it looks like when you when skin is burned, but it was pretty deep. And whoa. But I couldn't see behind me. So I'm like, damn, my ass is on fire. So at least, I won't be able to wear any thongs in Italy this summer. I mean, that was my mentality of trying to.
So the real losers were the Italian women.
Exactly. But the thing that really hit me was when, I'm so oblivious to what's happening, right? Like I forgot about the landing. I forgot we have to land too. I forgot about the fact that the balloon was on top of the power cord. So it didn't even dawn on me to look up. But as I'm helping her get out of the basket, and the paramedics have now showed up about 15 minutes later. And then as I'm helping her get out of the basket, the balloon itself starts getting electrocuted by the power lines. And I'm looking up like, you gotta be like, what's next? You know what I mean? Like, what's next? And so again, I had no idea what my butt looked like, but I was like, whatever. And then, so I get into the ambulance after they took her in first, and then I got in. And I'm just looking around and everybody's kind of doing their thing. They're working and, getting the stuff prepared. And I'm like, and I just started busting out laughing, right? I just started busting out laughing. And so everyone, like, it just kind of shifts and they look at me like, oh my God, this guy's going insane. And they're like, Mr. Stallworth, are you okay? And I'm like, I said, I played in the National Football League. I've had broken bones. I've had torn ligaments. I've walked off the field every fucking time. I'm in an air balloon for 2 hours and I'm getting fucking air evac to a hospital. My first time in a helicopter. Like, come on, dude. Like, you can't make that up.
From the hot air balloon.
You can't make that up. But the thing when it really hit me was when I got to the hospital and, we're evac, air evac. So we get to the hospital. We rode in the helicopter together and the doctor comes out and he looks like Doogie Howser. He's like 5 years old. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, you're the doctor? I'm 32 years old now. So, he looked younger than me. And wow. So I'm like, okay, this is just getting, not to talk bad about young people in professions, but I'm just saying like, I was like, I need somebody a little more seasoned that's going to help me with whatever I got going on. And I get in there and then the doctor says, he's like, man, you guys are really lucky. He's like, because people usually don't come to this floor for these types of injuries or for these types of accidents. And it took me about 5 to 7 seconds to realize what he was saying. And I'm like, oh, like, so you're saying that like people usually like die from these injuries. And I'm like, okay, like that wasn't very comforting, but okay.
Bedside manner.
I'm telling you, and this is probably the worst part of the story, is that and again, this could be like a book in itself. I get to the hospital and I had never in my mind thought that you know, I've got to like watch my back in a hospital. And I say watch my back because they were not equipped to handle burns. They didn't have a burn unit. Jackson Memorial in Miami is one of the most renowned burn centers in the country. People fly all the time, all around the country to go to Jackson Memorial, which is in Miami. But that's not the hospital that we were at. We were at the one that was closest. So the doctors, like, I mean, dude, it was that I was there for, I don't know, maybe eight hours. And the doctor comes in there and I can laugh about it now because I'm still alive. But the doctor comes in there and asked me, he said, would you like a catheter? And I'm like, no. Like, who's going to say, sure, give me a catheter. Right? So I'm like, no. And then so he's just like going about his business. And then long story short, it was terrible. And thank God for Amy Pausick because she was living in Orlando at the time.
Oh, love Amy.
She's one of my closest friends. And she literally saved my life. She drove down there. I don't know. She made it there in like 5 minutes from Orlando to Miami. She drove down there, and the hospital was more concerned about Dante Stallworth, the football player, as opposed to Dante Stallworth, the patient. And Amy recognized this immediately, and she was going back and forth, you know, going to visit my girlfriend and coming back to me and saying, hey, I don't feel good about this. Like, don't you have friends who, you know people at the Jackson Memorial? Or don't you have a friend whose father is one of the doctors there? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, you need to reach out to her right now and say that you've got to go there. Cause she's like, they are extremely negligent here. And so the hospital kept asking me, you know, they wanted me to stay and they wanted me to know how do I wanted to handle the PR, like the people that were calling, you know, all the media that was calling to figure out what was happening.
Yeah. Like,
that's not my job. What are you saying? Talking about, right?
What part of my ass is on fire? Do you
know? You know what I'm saying? And so I'm like, no, like, what's happening here? And thank God, I said, you know what? I said, any questions you have to ask her, and I pointed to Amy, and I was like, Amy is in control.
Yeah, she'll handle it.
and she totally did. And so I got, dude, I got transferred from that hospital. I got transferred to Jackson Memorial. And I get to Jackson Memorial at about, it's close to midnight at this point. The hot air balloon accident happened around 10:30-ish, 10:30 a.m. And now it's close to midnight, right? So I get in there and my friend's father, Jenna Green, her father is one of the doctors. And he's walking as I'm getting, rolled into the hospital. He comes over to me and he's just like a breath of fresh air. And it's my first time meeting him. So it was really odd that just to quickly tell you what kind of guy he is. He was one of the ones in Miami who, after the Haiti earthquake, went down to Haiti and set up these makeshift hospitals and was, donating his time, donating his resources to go down there and spend time down there and kind of help with, the people that needed help down there in Haiti after the earthquake. And I actually donated to his program. I got a lot of guys in the NFL to donate to his program. So he's like, hey, he's like, it sucks we have to meet this way. He was like, but, this was years later, and I hadn't even met him. And he was like, I just wanted to thank you for, donating to get other guys to donate. He was like, we put it to good use. And I had been following everything. They had, given me all the information and what they were doing. But that was our first time actually meeting. And so he's like making jokes. And just it just changed my whole, like, it just made everything easier, right? And then so I get into the room, and he says to me, he's like, all right, dude. He's like, I got good news and I got bad news. He's like, which one do you want first? I'm always asking for the bad news first.
Sure.
So I was like, give me the bad news. And he's like, well, the bad news is that I got to give you a catheter. He's like, the good news is that, you're going to live, right? And he kind of like, it was kind of a ha-ha joke thing. And so Amy rats me out, and Amy says, well, he turned down a catheter at the other hospital. And I'm looking at Amy like, damn, I'm like, you're snitching on me on my deathbed, right? Like, but the doctor says, Dr. Green looks and he's like, what? And he almost lost it. And I'm like, oh, like, he's actually upset with me. But he was actually upset with the hospital for asking me.
So
he says to me, "Yes to the catheter."
right.
Well, also maybe the person who's in charge of all things medical should make that decision and not the guy who did the flu.
I don't know. Maybe I don't know if we should believe doctors, though. That seems to be like not.
Right. Yeah, what is science these days anyway?
Yeah,
right?
I mean, like that Dr. Fauci.
Right. But it was interesting because I had no idea and it didn't dawn on me. He asked me, "They've been giving you IVs the whole time you've been at the hospital, right?" And I said, "Yes." He was like, "When was the last time you used the bathroom?" And I said, "Oh shit." I was like, "It was at 7:30 this morning." And he was like, "Dude, we need to put a catheter in you right now, immediately." Because he's like, "Your kidneys aren't working. Your kidneys aren't working. And you've had, you know, probably 8 bags of IVs and your kidneys aren't working. And we need to put a catheter in you immediately, like right now."
That might
because if I would have stayed there, dude, they would have killed me, man. I can laugh at it now. And I didn't even think about like any lawsuits or anything because I was just happy to be alive. And I'm not trying to sound dramatic because I didn't once, other than when I got electrocuted, outside of that, I didn't once feel like my life was in danger. But when he told me that, then that's when I kind of like that changed things for me. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's like now I'm inviting the catheter. Like, okay, like what are you waiting for? Let's do it right now. Let's do it.
Yeah, get this fluid out. So you all three lived.
We did. And interesting thing enough about that is that the pilot had 0 injuries. And I don't wish that guy any ill will. He didn't intentionally, to my knowledge, try to run us into a power line. And he actually put my fire out and put her fire out because I wouldn't have been. I was stuck. I couldn't move. So, but it was the most. It was the most painful thing that getting electrocuted. That sucked, man. But to know that, you know, to know that negligence could have been the end of me was bad. I'm like telling you guys all this stuff, and I don't think I've, you know, again, been hiding it. But I don't know if this is maybe my first time talking about it publicly, but it's just interesting, man, how that like opened my eyes to like, well, damn, what would have happened if I would have died? They would have blamed the hot air balloon and was like, oh, you know, we're not just going to worry about it. We forgot to put a catheter in. We asked him if he needed a catheter. And I'm like, you know what? If that happened to me, like how many times is this happening to other people around the country, man? And that sucks to think about. Again, I'm not trying to make this story dramatic about me dying or being on death's door or anything, because I'd never felt that way. But it just made me realize, man, that there's a lot of issues in this country, man, and we've got a lot to do to fix. And one thing that no one can ever worry about me is that I hate needles. And so when the doctor, when they come to me and they're asking me, hey, you know, what do you usually take? You know, for pain, you know, obviously football players are notorious for surgeries and all this stuff. So he's like, what, you know, what medicines did you have? And I was like, I think it's Oxycodone or whatever that is. So I told him Oxy, whatever. And he was like, no, he's like, you're going to need something stronger than that. And I'm like, well, what's happening? And he's like, well, because we're going to have to scrape, you know, your butt, basically we're going to have to scrape that area, scrape off the dead skin, you know, so the new skin can have room to grow. And he's like, you're going to need something much stronger than Oxycontin. And I was like, well, doc, I said, I don't know. Like, whatever you think I should have, then give it to me, right? And so he's like, okay, well, I'm going to give you this stuff called Dilaudid. And he's like, I'm going to, and I'm like, okay, like, whatever. Sounds good, whatever. So they inject it in my arm, like in my IV, right? And the nurse says, okay, let me know when you feel this. And I immediately got this weird, like, just everything went slow. And I was like, yeah, I said, I could feel it. And so then she put that in and then they did the scraping. And then Amy comes back in there afterwards. I can't see her. My eyes are open, but I can't see anything. And I heard, and Amy's very, you know, Amy, Mike, right? Like she's very, like she gets the job done, but she's not one to be yelling and cursing.
No.
And she walks in there and she says, oh my God, what the fuck did you guys do to him? all I could see was like a silhouette of her. And I heard her say that. And come to find out, you know, after I come down off that medicine they gave me, I'm like, what the hell is this? Because I don't ever want it again. So I Googled it and I'm like, and I'm looking at him like, it's it's a derivative of opium. So I just did like legal heroin. I'm like,
great.
Don't ever give me that shit again. Ever. I will deal with the pain, just like I've dealt with other pain, with in injuries and broken bones and surgeries and things like that. Just don't bring that anywhere near me ever again.
That's
so that was my lessons from that, was to never get on a hot air balloon and to never do heroin or opium.
Well, it's funny as you're telling that story. I know Natalie is definitely, it's resonating with her, because you know she prided herself on her toughness and played through some broken bones and all that, and you know had to miss a couple of games here and there, but you know never suited up. But at one point, I was talking to her, and when she was getting to the point in soccer where she was beating people, but was really skinny, and you know, if they would make contact with her in the box, she could easily sell falling down and getting a PK. And I said, you know, if you're in a tournament situation, and you know, I think you were about 9 or 10, I'd say if you're in a tournament situation and you're down a goal and it's, you know, time's running out, you might want to, you know, think about selling contact and try. And she goes, and I go, you know, maybe stay down and yell. And she goes, well, but then my streak would end. I go, what streak? She's like, the game has never been stopped on my account. And I was like, whoa. And I didn't know there was a streak, but you know, and it lasted your whole career. And I know, you know, wow. she hopped off the field on a throw in with a broken foot after staying. I mean, it's really cool. Like, I think that's, you know, you did a lot of cool things in sports, but to me, that was the coolest thing, to know that you had pride in that. And
well, it's also funny too, because like the last play of my club soccer career, I knew that I had an injured foot, and you were getting advice from some NFL doctors.
We'll tell
that later. But she was taking a lot of ibuprofen and
Tylenol,
and so there was just this one point of contact where I knew I was injured, but I went like foot to foot with some girl, felt it break on the spot, and I would just like, I don't know, I like hopped off the field.
You waited for a throw in, you hopped off.
And I get off the field, take my cleat off, fucking slam it into the ground, and you're just on the sideline.
And I texted my wife, hey, I think I fucked up.
So you know.
But that is, you know, that resonates with me, that you were never helped off. I remember vividly the 49ers in the late 90s, there was this huge incident where one of the newer guys on the defense, they were playing a Monday night game in Green Bay, of, you know, Favre and Young, a very, very tense game, maybe like, I want to say 96, 97 era, 98. And one of the players went down and had to be helped off with a finger injury. And, you know, Tim McDonald and Merton Hanks and some of the, you know, tougher stalwarts on the team were like attacking their teammate as he was being helped off and carted off with a finger. Like, dude, you can't get the cart for a finger.
Oh my God, man.
Oh man. Well, you're allowed to, we'll give you the air vac, with electrocution. That's, you know.
Yeah, you can have that.
Your toughness creds are impeccable, and we appreciate you, man. Let's definitely revisit. I'm hoping we can get you back sometime after your birthday, because I hope that somehow my fantasy of November 3rd will play out. And I know someone will take a video of you.
I hope it's live streamed. I would just watch the entire thing.
I would. You know what, Natalie? That's a good idea. That's what I'm going to do.
There we go.
Thanks for the suggestion. Yes, for sure.
Sponsored by like a catheter company. I think you set the record. We've had like ridiculously long podcasts. I think you might have set the record.
Yeah.
We have claimed 85 minutes of your time and counting. So
amazing. I loved it. Every minute of it.
All right, man. Right back at you. We love you, and we will talk to you soon down the road.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
No problem.
Bye-bye.